Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013. I am one of your co-hosts. My name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash.
Billy, and how is your data mining job going? Are you on drapes and lampshades this week?
Well, sometimes it's hard to get into people's heads, and when I get there, I don't know how to leave. How's that?
Ooh, snap.
Yeah, boom.
Because tonight, we are going to be talking about Brandon Cronenberg's much-buzzed sophomore effort, Possessor.
Mm-hmm.
This is a film that has gotten very enthusiastic, good reviews since its debut, I believe, back in September.
Yeah.
And it feels like to me it's just been accumulating more and more interest as time has gone on. And we're recording this show on December 17th, and I believe last week it officially came out on DVD and Blu-ray and 4K. So it seems kind of timely.
Quite.
Billy and I have both seen the movie, and I have honestly no idea where we're going to start with it. So maybe Billy, you can put on your thinking helmet and sort of go into Brandon Cronenberg's brain and see where. Where exactly are we going with Possessor? Maybe that's the question.
Well, I think we need to start with his freshman creation, which was Antiviral, which he did a few years back, starring Caleb Landry Jones. And, you know, just like his father, you know, apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I hate that thing, but, you know, I hate that saying, but it's true in this case. Brandon Cronenberg, he does body horror. And Antiviral was like just the perfect statement of fan-induced mania over their celebrities, and I loved the movie, the music, all of it, acting, cinematography. It went right to my best of horror films ever. I enjoyed it right away. So I was looking forward to this. Like, what's he going to do next? And it was great because we've usually sophomore efforts, depending on the person, you know, not like Joe Bagos or anything like that, but,
right,
you know, we had it with M. Night Shyamalan and Jordan Peele, where their second efforts didn't live up to the first one.
Sophomore slump. Yeah.
Sophomore slump. I mean, you know, Ari Aster, like, I mean, his stuff's garbage. But anyway, oh, did I say that out loud publicly? Geez. Learn how to tell a story, asshole. But anyway.
He's kind of like the Eli Roth of the art house world. Yeah.
God, yes, you nailed it. Holy shit, that's perfect.
Sorry, send all your hate tweets to @JohnnyNum on Twitter. Yeah.
You know, so it was like, all right, so how can he top this? Where's he going to go? And the cool thing is I like his brain. I like his storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing behind the scenes how he is, you could tell he's a very introverted person and he doesn't waste his time. You could tell he studies and reads. So when I'm looking up like this movie, Possessor, and I'm finding out, I'm watching it and I'm seeing like, oh, he not copied or anything like that, but he used elements from, you know, certain other storytellers, which I think is great. It was interesting to read that he said he was inspired by two pieces of media for this film.
Hmm.
The first is Jose Delgado's 1970s book, Physical Control of the Mind Toward a Psycho-Civilized Society, which, and I'm quoting here, demonstrates how movements can be induced by radio command, hostility may appear or disappear, social hierarchy can be modified, sexual behavior may be changed, and memory, emotions, and the thinking process may be influenced by remote control. That's frightening shit. And that's from the 70s when everything was analog. And yes. The second was the short film, Please Speak Continuously and Describe Your Experiences as They Come to You. that he had made in the past. And so this is, so he, you could say he used that story as a seed for this massive effort. And I couldn't wait to get my paws on it because it's like, it's him, man. He's back. He's finally doing another movie. And in this one, my gosh, we have Andrea Riseborough, who's phenomenal as always. Jennifer Jason Leigh. Who was great because she played a role that was a little, her character was like so subdued. And there was a subdued feeling about the whole movie, which I think worked really, really well. Mm-hmm. And
Christopher Abbott, who was brilliant. In a film we really liked, but it's a really different film than this, Piercing from a couple years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. But man, he brought it hard. Christopher Abbott was friggin' phenomenal. And Sean Bean was like, I haven't been like this before, because it was like, whoa, Sean, what's going on, man? Like,
to boredom, Bill, to boredom.
So, and this movie looked amazing. I saw a lot of Frusciante and Cate in it.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, who I love. You know, they did Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, A Mirror, and Ingmar.
But the Corpse's Town.
I saw Bergman in there. You know, I saw some stuff that he wasn't necessarily paying homage to or anything like that, but he was, it was just reminiscent. And the cool thing was for this movie, most of the effects were physical, in-camera effects, mm-hmm. you know, and he used CGI as little as possible, and which I thought was really cool. But this movie just has a weird vibe to it, didn't you think?
Oh, absolutely, Bill. And ironically, my cat is scratching at her litter box, and that comes into play in the movie near the end. There's a very profound speech that revolves around a cat using a litter box and a little anecdote about a worm, and it's
oh my god. Yeah.
In any case, that's neither here nor there. Thank you, Kima, for your contribution. Yeah, you know, there is a weird vibe to this film, Bill, and to what you were saying about how it reminded you of Cate and Forzani and Bergman even. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting about this film to me is that Antiviral, maybe I need to rewatch it. It's mm-hmm. I haven't seen it since the first time I watched it. I liked it. But it was like, I didn't like it as much as you did. And I'm wondering if it's one of those films that'll get better the more I watch it. Cause it's pretty, it's very abstract, very dense. But with this film, I think the desire with Antiviral was to say, oh, Brandon Cronenberg's trying to be his father, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And not that there's anything wrong with that, especially if you show the level of talent that he showed right out the gate with that film. But with Possessor, the interesting thing was there were a couple little things like the helmet that Tassia Voss wears.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You know, that seems to come from an arbitrary, it's attached to a stem that just goes up to the ceiling and no one knows what's being fed into it or what it's doing. I was like, you could see that as kind of a corollary to like the helmet that Max Wren puts on at one point in Videodrome.
That's the first thing I thought of, and I thought that was so cool. It's like, it's almost like he was waving to his dad, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. And all that analog tech stuff too, that you mentioned, actually there's a lot of analog tech in the movie.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that you brought up that book that he was reading. I was like, okay, that makes total sense now. But my point was, it doesn't, despite the fact that there are little elements here and there that could be like, oh yeah, that's like what the elder Cronenberg would do. It felt like Brandon Cronenberg. It did not feel like David, to me.
Right.
It's not like, oh, Brandon, young Brandon is still in the shadow of his father. I feel like he has arrived with this film, really.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
It feels like its own thing, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know Antiviral blew me away, and I was just, like, amazed from the beginning. It's like, where did he come from? but I know where he studied, you know. It's like you can almost see him on, yeah, I was on a set of my dad's films taking notes, which is fine, you know, because he wrote and directed. I guess we should tell people what the hell the movie's about before we get into it.
Do you want to handle that duty, Bill?
Yeah, because I'm reading straight off IMDb. I'm just going right for that.
All right. Yeah, sure.
Possessor follows an agent who works for a secretive organization that uses brain implant technology to inhabit other people's bodies, ultimately driving them to commit assassinations for high-paying clients. And that's pretty much it. And it's that simple. And it's funny because this is a simple movie. It just had one of those endings and one of those end lines where I was, I gasped. You know, it wasn't as super powerful as maybe Martyrs ending end line. But it was like, ooh. And it's like, because I'm watching this movie and I'm like, okay. All right, this is what's going on. Where are we going? Where are we going?
Yeah.
Where are we going? Where are we going? Where are we? And then it's like, wow, we arrived. And it was like, and I remember feeling so cold at the end of this movie. Because he did some stuff in there. Obviously, we're not going to go into like details that were like, oh, man, if other directors did that, they wouldn't get funding. They wouldn't get a blessing from anybody.
Yeah, you know, I think, Bill, kind of like what you were saying, antiviral was like, in a certain sense, maybe the proof of concept, even though it was a feature. And then this is kind of like the springboard into, this is his aesthetic now. This is kind of who he is. This is sort of the, I have the freedom to do. I don't know how he quite got the freedom to do a film that essentially played in theaters unrated, because that's how I first saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to say, in terms of the violence in the film, which you were alluding to a little bit before, I was like thinking to myself, okay, Possessor uncut. It's such a big deal that this film is uncut that they're using it on the poster.
Right.
So when I sat down to watch the movie, within the first 5 minutes, there's a scene where it's just like, holy shit. Imagine if Lucio Fulci's The New York Ripper was made by Pascal Laugier with the practical effects of Martyrs, kind of that high level of nastiness where it's just like, oh, I did not expect to see something so super violent just right out the gate like that. And it just kind of, in this movie, everything is being pushed, like the violence is pushed like at least 24 stab wounds too far every time.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, Martyrs and all, because I was like, at one point, one of the characters' hands was covered in blood, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they used real blood like they do in French films, like Martyrs, you know? It's like, you know, I mean, obviously it's fake blood, but they know how to do it right. And and this movie was more, it was funny because where there's you know, he made this real statement about, you know, being a fan and antiviral. It almost seemed like almost like a teenagery type movie now after watching this, because it's like, holy crap, we're in adult world now, and it's really, really unpleasant, and it's going to remain unpleasant. And that's what I loved. It's like the carry, the way everything moved in the story, I thought was just really, really cool. And it was really subdued. I mean, all the characters, like even with, whatchamacallit? Oh my gosh, how come I forgot his name? Christopher Abbott already.
Yeah.
You know, he had, you know, there's a lot of emotion in this film, but it's like people are holding back, and which leads to not good things, which was really cool. And just to see how this whole movie turned out, it's like you're looking at, like, the whole movie is like an onion, and then by like the end of it, it all becomes unpeeled all at once, and it's like worth the wait. It's because I could see some people, oh, this is too slow, or, you know, some crap like that, and which it wasn't. It was just really well paced and suspenseful in that, because it was really hard to predict what was going to happen and how and when. And
I think the pacing was very consistent throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it really was. This was not like the type of horror movie I expected. And the weird thing is, like, you know, I was talking to Palco of Palco Designs the other night about The Shining and how we both like it. And I said, and that movie had the most innocuous beginning. You're watching a yellow VW Beetle go up this road, and the music was just so unnerving that you're like, you know, he made the simple driving of a car feel really, you know, just
ominous,
fearful and ominous and disorienting. And that's what he did in this film. It seems like so many elements are so business as usual, and it's like, this is not usual business. And I think that's what I really like, those contrasts that he did, you know, with the extreme violence and all. It's like, how was work today? Almost, you know, it's like, you know, it was a little tough, but, you know, I made it, you know. I got a break and I got a bagel, and then, you know, I washed my hands, got the blood off, and went back and did some more. And it's like, damn. But it was really amazing how everything in there was so, not contrived, but so, again, we were talking before about Rob Zombie, about how he's a conscientious filmmaker, whether you like his movies or not. You know, he knows what he's doing and he really cares about it, blah, 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 which is great. I'm not dismissing that at all. And you got the same sense here where it's like, I have a plan. And it's like, and it's cool to follow where he leads you. And the thing is, you don't really know where you're going. And I think that's what I like, because traditional storytelling for something like this, with the thrill element and the horror element and the murder and assassination element, there's certain expectations in a movie like this with character development, turns, plot twists and all. And it's like, yeah, I'm not doing that. It's like... And there are twists and turns and such, but they're not the way you would expect them to be in your average Hollywood piece of crap film. You know, definitely not formula at all. And that's what I love about both these movies.
Yeah, and I agree with that, Bill. I rewatched the movie last night to get a kind of a refresher on it. And I was, knowing what was going to happen, I was still like, honing in on these weird details where I'm like trying to piece stuff together still. And I like that about it. There's stuff that happens in brief flashes through a character's perception. And I'm like, what does that have to do with X, Y, and Z kind of,
right.
So it's kind of, it keeps you on your toes. It does keep you watching. I think it's a very unconventional take on a couple of genres. And I did find it very compelling. And there's a lot of interesting imagery in the film. Like Cronenberg likes to, there's a great shot I'm thinking of where Christopher Abbott is with his girlfriend who he's going to marry, who's the daughter of Sean Bean's character, who's this millionaire or billionaire.
Right.
And he's walking through this luminous, opulent mansion and looking up at the ceiling, and everything is perfectly symmetrical. So, you know, it's like a curving ceiling where each side is reflective of the same thing. And I kind of love the use of that, the use of mirrors in the film.
Oh, like, yeah.
Well, who are you looking at in the mirror? And there's even one brilliant moment where... Cronenberg kind of has two characters looking back at one person from the mirror, kind of. Which that shot was, thought was pretty brilliant.
Agreed.
So there's this whole thing of identity and kind of who are you going on, but there's also all of this stuff like, and I don't know how much this ties into our current national nightmare, but you know, of kind of like, well, Andrea Riseborough's character is manifesting another person to carry out these assassinations. So it's like this weird kind of deflection. You're still responsible, but it's like you're not at the same time.
Yeah.
'Cause because you're using this other body as a vessel to accomplish this act. And in the end, you're getting, quote unquote, pulled out, you know, safely, and reaping whatever rewards are coming from these commissioned hits that are happening. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing in this time where people are always passing the buck or throwing their friends and colleagues under the bus to, you know, to get ahead or get out of trouble or whatever.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's a lot to say even with the movie poster, because it's yellow. And yellow is, you know, freshness, happiness, positivity, energy, optimism, enlightenment, even, you know, remembrance, also intellect, honor, and loyalty and joy, but it can also represent cowardice and deceit.
Wow.
And I think all of those elements play a role in the movie, because that in the poster, she has that distorted face, which obviously it's from the film, so it's a segment of the film. And it's like, I remember, because I remembered the poster, and I'm like, okay, I can't wait to see that scene and what it represents. And then I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, this is really messing with my head now. And which I thought was really cool. But I think this reminds me of a story I heard, and till this day, even with Google and all the great power before me with the internet, I haven't been able to find the story, but I remember reading a story of a young man who wanted to leave his village in search of truth. He wanted to discover truth. So I don't remember the details, but he goes through all of these stories, and he's trying to find truth. And finally he does. And he finds truth, and it's an old woman. And the woman turns to him and says, "You found truth. Now tell everyone that I'm beautiful." And it's like, fuck. And this is, that reminded me of that in so many ways.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty profound there. Yeah.
Yeah. About, you know, what, you know, what the truth is. And the movie is so beautifully bookended from beginning to end. It's really wonderful, because even in the poster of the movie, it's POSS, and then he has the E opened up, and then the SSOR on possessor is facing the reverse, and it's just brilliant. It's like, you see the poster, you know, anytime you're watching this movie and you're like, I don't really know what's going on, think of the fucking poster, and you're gonna be fine, you know. God, because I really want to talk about that ending so much, but we can't and we won't.
We probably should keep it spoiler
free. Yeah, definitely. This is so fresh.
A lot of people are probably just seeing it for the first time, or if they've seen it yet at all. So, I think we can dance around it, Bill.
Yeah, we are. I've been dancing the whole time.
Well, you know, something I like is, not giving too much away, how Cronenberg plays in kind of very subtle way with the notions of gender identity as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know, I really liked the sequence where Tassia Vos and Colin, the Christopher Abbott character, have kind of synced up. I love when he wakes up and it's like he's seeing the world for the first time. You get this real impression that it's someone else looking at the world through his eyes, through his body language, through the way he like examines himself in
the
mirror.
Right, exactly. It was beautiful, I thought.
So it's like there's this weird mundanity to kind of these tasks that we're watching him do, but it takes on a different edge because, oh, that's not him.
Yeah, that's why I thought Christopher Abbott's performance was so fantastic as Colin Tate, because he had to play another character who was playing his character. So, you know, I don't know how he prepared for that, but I thought he really did a wonderful job, because I thought those subtleties in Discovery, I thought, were great. And it was awesome because there were times when it's like, are you okay? Are you okay today? And it just like, he didn't give a shit. You know, it was great. He's like, I'm on mission. I got like 3 hours, blah, 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 you know? And it was just like, well, imagine like if somebody was switched, you know, what would you do? How would you really know? Because it's not like, holy crap, that can happen. But what if it does? And like, what are you going to do? And you could really go, oh, so-and-so's not really acting himself today. You're just going to blow it off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I thought that was handled so well in the film. All of those little elements, all those little details were handled so beautifully.
And I really like the push pull between the characters too. It's very like from one moment to the next, you're kind of left guessing. Cause the tagline for the film is lose control.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole film is kind of like, in ways both subtle and overt, it's just about people going off the deep end, basically going off the rails in one way or another, like sort of teetering along the edge of whether it's madness or violence or both kind of. It's just very much it is a film about relinquishing control, kind of leaving it to fate almost. And I find that to be something that's very powerful about it and very, makes it very gripping because like you said, Bill, to the unpredictability of the narrative, just like, well, you don't know what's going to happen or if something starts to happen, you're not sure how severe it's going to get per se. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things you just reminded me of something that I thought of when I was watching the film was I saw the movie Alien in it too, but in a really weird way.
Oh, okay. All right.
I saw Dr. Ash and his speech where it's like, I admire its purity, no delusions of morality. And that's what I really liked about this. And that added to the coldness of the film. They could have filmed this in the summer. It could have been summer and sunny and shiny, but you'd want a jacket because you'd be freezing.
I think part of that, Bill, is the fact that it was shot in Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I do think Cronenberg deliberately, it's pretty obvious, he either really low lit a lot of scenes,
yes,
so they look darker, and even the exterior shots. Granted, you know, Toronto architecture is absolutely beautiful. I love the architecture up there from the one time I actually got to visit.
I'm jealous. It's like the major Canadian city I haven't seen yet, so I'm jealous.
Yeah, my heart is more with Montreal because I got to visit there more. But Toronto was just very, very clean, you know, and the buildings were just, the skyscrapers were really cool looking, very modern,
right,
architectural. But there is a coldness to that architecture. There's kind of a bluish gray kind of yellow color scheme going, which you see in the film with the exterior shots. And I really like that, how the color seemed even more grayed down and more down-tuned.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved I love those exterior shots because none of them are ever like straight on. They're always starting at kind of a tilted angle and they continue to tilt until it cuts to something else. And I really like how there are those symmetrical shots in the film, but then you have these exterior shots that just are constant reminders of things are off kilter and they're just continuing to get worse, kind of. That just events are moving, they continue to move, but they're just continuing to be more and more off kilter and off base. And I really like that little bit of visual storytelling there.
Oh, absolutely. The thematic elements of filming that you were talking about, it matches perfectly with the thematic elements of the story. And that's why he's such a, I don't know how he is on set. I'm hoping when I get the DVD, you know, behind the scenes, because I heard there's a lot of footage on the floor and there's maybe talk of a second movie and all of fun stuff.
Okay.
It's like, because I could see him being deliberate, like maybe a Hitchcock, but not not like a jerk like Hitchcock from what I read. You know, it's like, stand there, don't move, do this. But I'm an actor. I'm supposed. No, you're not doing anything except what I tell you. I have a funny feeling Brandon Cronenberg's different. And I have a funny feeling that he might even deliver like a little 2 or 3 seconds speech. Like, all right, this is the scene, or this is even the movie. And this is it. And this is what we're going for. And they go, oh, I got it. And, you know, he lets him run. The actors and all, but I just thought that was just it was a great contrast to a lot of the horror movies we're watching today that don't have that are over stylized, that are overlit. I swear to God, like half the movies I see, it's like, oh, they have the same cinematographer from the last 20 horror movies I've seen, because they're all doing it the same way, and it just isn't good enough, and it's just ruining the genre for me, because it's like, well, this isn't scary because the kid's asleep in bed, but you have 3 lights on, you have lights coming through the friggin' windows from outside. It's like, what the frig, man? It's not dark, it's not night. But here, it was different, you know?
You know what, Bill? And I think to maybe touch on a little something else to what you're saying, I think, alluding to the score by Jim Williams.
Yeah.
It is excellent. Mm-hmm. He actually he composed the score to Raw, which I liked, but you didn't. And
whatever. Didn't mean I didn't like the soundtrack.
Yeah, but I mean, it was kind of an interesting. What's kind of the soundtrack du jour these days among indies, and I'm not complaining about it at all because this is like my sweet spot. Is just these kind of droning atonal scores synthesizers and stuff. And I feel like this score is very, it feels more minimalist, but it's very droning. It's very low tones throughout. Yeah. So it's not like every bit of action is cued with a shrieking Bernard Herrmann string, you know, or whoever the hacks who imitate Bernard Herrmann are these days. You know, it's not like that in this film. So I think that adds a certain quality to the character moments and the violence as well. Just like it just adds to that sort of bleakness, I think, that you were hinting at, kind of the gray, wintry Toronto feel of the whole thing. It's very understated. I like that about the score, and I like that about how Cronenberg approaches even his compositions. It's like there's a lot of stuff that's just very brilliant in its simplicity, I think, in this film.
No, I agree. And Kareem Hussein did he was the director of photography. You've seen him in a ton of other movies, actually. Maybe not a ton, but you know, he's done many other things. And the film editing was also excellent in this, which also helped, of course, tell that story, because if you don't have a good editor, you're not. The sound was perfect. It was like,
yeah,
you know, it was just interesting how he got all the components together. And one of the things that I really loved, and I really didn't realize it until now, until talking to you, is, oh my gosh, am I going to pronounce this name wrong? No, I'm not. Eileen Gilmore. She was the costume design. Mm. And I could see like her maybe having a million ideas and Brandon Cronenberg going like, average. You know what I mean? Like, what? But yeah, like keep it like nothing outrageous, nothing distinctive, nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
You know, because that was part of it. Part of that whole, you know, subdued element was it's like no, like even these people who were like wealthy and stuff, like it's like I think Sean Bean's wearing a sweater I think I saw once in a store for $20. You know what I mean?
You know what, Bill? It looks like I was just thinking about his like black shirt and pants. It looks like he got them from frickin' Kohl's, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever the Canadian equivalent of Kohl's is.
No, I know what you mean. And I even the makeup on people and all, like, you know, everything is just subdued and downplayed. And which was great. Everything's bottom end. Everything, like, if they wanted to go like an extra mile backwards, it's like, okay, everybody, you're emo. And then if they wanted to go a little more, it's like, okay, you're goth, you know? And it's like,
right.
But I just thought it was really perfect of, you know, that was, I thought, the beauty of it. It's like, these are all people you recognize. This is a world you recognize. But check out this nightmare that's going on right now, and you don't even know it. And that just added to the whole fear factor element.
Yeah, and that element of unpredictability.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Bill, to what you were saying about the costume design and such, do you? This is something that just popped into my head. When do you think this film takes place? Do you think it takes place in the present? 10 years from now, did you get a feel for when this film is taking place, and does it matter? Maybe that's the question.
I don't think it really matters. I think that's why this film will just continue to hold up for a long, 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 long time. I thought it was taking place in the here and now.
Yeah, that's how I felt as well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because you mentioned at the beginning of the show about the interest in analog technology. Mm-hmm. So you have these very these settings that look very modern,
right.
where stuff is happening. Like, for example, the hotel where the opening scene takes place is extremely modern day,
right.
In its design and in its look and in its lighting. And then you have these weird anachronistic like gadgets that they're using for these assassinations for various purposes. You have that huge helmet that fits over Andrea Riseborough's head, like the Videodrome helmet, you know, actually more clunkier and bigger than the Videodrome helmet. So I think that's an interesting bit of contrast going on, which makes the film feel kind of, at once conceptually kind of futuristic, but in terms of the visuals are very current, but then you have this technology that seems like it's a couple decades, like it's in the 70s, like the book like the book he was referencing. So I think that's interesting. It kind of puts the film kind of out of that trap that a lot of filmmakers with a lot more money utilize. I was thinking about crappy CGI shitfests that create this sci-fi landscape. I'll kick Marvel in the knees and say, you know, with an Avengers movie, that's just going to look, it's going to look ridiculous in 30, 40 years because everything, there's nothing that feels real about it. Everything feels like a CGI construct, which in most cases it is. Whereas with this, I didn't get that feeling. Everything felt very practical, very hands-on. And I think this is speaking to my old man, you know, get off my lawn, get off my cinematic lawn kind of thing. It's just like, that's the stuff that is more endearing to me, you know, is the stuff that, oh, you went and made this by yourself. You didn't try to make it look quote unquote futuristic.
Right.
And therefore, I think that kind of seals a film's fate. Kind of is something that you will come back to and you won't look at it and be like, oh, that's so dated now. You know, it's yeah. Yeah. Anyway, long story short, it's what you, like you said, Bill, it feels very much of the moment, but I think it'll endure past the moment. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, cause it's funny. I was watching last night, there was nothing on and I'm like, screw this crap. I'm going to watch this. I know it's like, but I want to check my brain at the door. I watched Forbidden World.
Oh my God, that movie is so fun.
It is fun. It's ridiculous. And it's like, yeah, we got the story and yeah, whatever. And it's so dated. It's just so awful in so many ways. And I always love when, especially those early movies in the 80s, this was made in 1982. It's like, yeah, we got to get computer stuff in there. You know, it's like, okay, great. You know, and it's like so... Like,
bad.
my God, it's like just 15 years after that movie was made, like leaps and bounds, like in ways that just don't add up, you know? I always argue away for like Alien because it's like, oh, it was a commercial ship. They didn't have anything extravagant. You know, it's like, that's all I did.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to say, Bill, the ship and Alien and everything. And it seemed like at least a couple decades behind whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the thing when Wilford Brimley's on the computer, I mean,
oh my God, yeah.
But I don't know anybody who really laughs or downplays that scene, for example, just because it's so effective still with those simple graphics. It just conveys so much. The music, Wilford Brimley looking so sad at the screen. You know, oh, yeah. I think that's why that still works. But again, yeah, it's.
Well, the
so
good,
those two get passes, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing, he dated the movie, said it was, you know, Antarctica 1982 or something like that, you know. So it's like it's okay, you know, it's fine. It's locked in. But when you do like anything like, yeah, it's year 2700, it's like you better get a think tank together to think of some wild shit that we can't even imagine because it's just craziness. But
right.
Yeah, but this whole movie just had, again, it had that unsettling feel, like right from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
The beginning is potent, man.
It is, and that's, and the title card pops up after that beginning sequence, and it's like, okay, Possessor, this is what you can.
Yeah.
Possessor in big letters. This is what you can expect, kind of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gabriel Graham in that opening sequence. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's like make your determination now whether you're in for the rest of it or not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I'm in, baby.
Well, you know, Bill, something to go back to the future worlds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the year is such and such, something ridiculous. That's, you know, I think that's another thing that'll keep this movie lasting is because Cronenberg doesn't specify. It's nope. That's like to him, it's like, well, it's him saying it's not about the year, it's about the story, it's about the concept, that's good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually when you start nitpicking minutia like that, it means the movie's probably not that good.
No, exactly. Exactly. Oh man, I can't believe Antiviral was 8 years ago. Holy crap!
I hope it doesn't take him that long to make another movie.
I don't think so, man. I think he's like he staked his Canadian flag into the ground really hard and strong, you know. And I was wondering.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just wonder what, you know, David Cronenberg thinks of his son. I haven't read anything on that yet, which I'd love to. And I'm wondering if it's like, yeah, you know what? I think I need to do another movie. Like, if one of his son's inspiring him to get back to horror.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Bill. I was going to mention that because...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, not that particularly, but just what you were saying about David. And just how... his last feature was Maps to the Stars, and that was 2014, I think. 2013, maybe. So yeah. It's kind of interesting how the elder Cronenberg has kind of receded away from making features. I know he has other stuff on the burner. I mean, he wrote a novel.
Right.
And I'm not sure what he's up to right now at the moment. But yeah, it's almost like, in a way, Brandon is kind of filling in that space where David would be doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and... You know, and it's working, but like I said at the beginning, it feels very much like Brandon Cronenberg with Possessor, not Brandon trying to be David.
No, not at all. That's what I like. Yeah. Yeah, it's not like he's ripping off his dad at all. I never got that feeling, which is really, really awesome. Just like, wow, this is a great, you know, handing off the, well, not an Oscar yet, but
yeah. I mean, who knows? Who knows what'll?
Yeah, because for all we know, Brandon Cronenberg would be like, you know, who knows? He might pull a Kashimike and do like a family film next. Who knows? You know, it's like, all right, I can't see that happening. But
I mean, thinking about the potency of Possessor, like as kind of a emotional, visceral experience, I can only imagine where he would push. And I feel like he will push, like where he'll push next. What subject matter, what kind of a story will he tell? I'm looking forward to whatever he conjures up in that brain of his next.
If it is his brain. Or it could be the worm talking.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, well, maybe that's a good place to wind down, Bill. Do you have any final impressions or comments on Possessor that you'd like to share as my cat sits on my lap and is being reflected in my monitor as we talk about the worm in the litter box? Yeah.
It needs to be seen. It's psychological horror. It's body horror. There's blood in air, and it's good blood. Real good blood. But you need, people, horror fans need to check this one out. And right now it's 4 out of 5 stars for me. That's solid. It could go up. It could go up. I need to see it again. It won't go down. I know that will happen. I can't forget it. It's in my head. It's just in my head.
Well, and you know what, Bill? That's the sign of another sign of a good movie. Because I'm not sure when did you watch this one?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. So for that to still be kicking around, that's the sign of a successful film. Because there are movies where I'm hard pressed to remember the details. Well, back when we had theaters, when I was walking out of the theater, I was like already forgetting what I'd seen. So
yeah. This is not a disposable film, not by any means.
Yeah, and I really like the film, and I think maybe something I'll add is that in addition to the stuff Billy and I were talking about, there's a whole ton of, even if you kind of get the plot and get where the film is going, like on a second viewing, there's a ton of nuance to be appreciated and observed in this film. From the performances to little visual details that Cronenberg puts in the screen, puts on the screen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's just a whole lot in this film. And like you sometimes say, Bill, it's like this, nothing in it feels accidental. Everything in it feels like it has a purpose in each moment, in each scene. And I really think that shows. And I think people looking to embrace something different and something a little more on the wild side, I think you'll be pleased with Possessor. I think I'll give it four stars. I'm actually teetering between 4 and 4.5, but I feel like it's more like a 4.25 than a proper 4.5. So maybe when I watch it a third time, it'll be a proper 4.5. So.
Yeah, and well, speaking, I think this is a good lead into our, we're doing our best and worst shows next of the year.
Oh, yeah. 2020. It's going to be interesting because, we were talking about it before we started recording, and I've liked a lot of stuff this year, but there's also been some crap too, so.
There's always a lot of crap, but I've seen some great stuff that's very impressive, and thanks to Palco again. Palco Designs, you know, he's like, Bill, you need to see this. Okay. And it's like, oh shit, I did. Thanks.
Yeah, like he texted me about that To Your Last Death movie like 2 nights ago. And yep, I was actually in the headspace of like, I wonder what I'll watch tonight. And I was like, okay, it's free on Prime. I'll watch that. Yeah.
Holy crap. The funny thing was, after I got his text, within 10 minutes, I was watching it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, this is great. And taking it from there.
I think we need Palco to like insist we watch movies more often. We'll watch.
Yeah.
Because we'll actually watch him when he says it. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. On that note, I guess it's time for Scream Outs, huh?
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead, Bill?
I'm going to scream. These are wonderful souls that we love, respect, and admire, and you could follow them on Twitter. And before we go there, by the way, you could go to Possessor Movie on Twitter, and you could get the latest and greatest from them. And we're going to start off tonight with Dale Elster. And he's a horror and dark fiction author. Deadsville, my first ever collection of short stories, is now available. He's out of oh my gosh, taking a sip of coffee. Every freaking time.
Narwhal.
Auburn, New York. And you can follow him on deadsvilleblog.com. He's a great soul. Moxie Tools. I love her. M-O-X-Y. She's phenomenal. Don't bother throwing people under the bus. Drive it over them and drive it like you stole it. I wasn't born with enough middle fingers. Moxie is just too cool for words. I tell her all the time you should be a stand-up comedian. She's just like zingers. She's must be a trip in reality. And just love her. So follow her. Another great soul is Mr. Josh 79. He's a father, husband, writer for Horrorbound, lover of the odd. That's true. The weird and the spooky. All true. Watch for the lousy lottery. He does that every Monday. He puts up a lousy lottery poll, and you pick the crappy movie for him to watch, and he'll watch it and then hate you later. He's out of Portland, Oregon. These are great film people now. Skip Bolden. Mm. Award-winning filmmaker and producer. You can follow him on IMDb and also at touchalifeproductions.com. He's a big supporter of indie film. Where is he? He's global. And he is cool as hell. He's wonderful. Also, another great film fanatic is Tico Romeo, R-O-M-A-O, independent film scholar and connoisseur of fine action sequences. He's out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Fantastic. I love to see what he posts every day as well as Skip, because it's just I'm keeping a list of movies I need to watch thanks to them if I haven't seen it. Speaking of movies, The Cinema Ticket and on Twitter, and that's also GR44. Movie fan in love with the technological medium that has harnessed the stuff of which dreams are made. And he's out of Cork, Ireland, and you could follow him at thecinematicket.wordpress.com. A wonderful soul. She's just amazing. We love the hell out of her. Kim McDonald.
Oh, yeah.
And you can follow her as Horror Pixie, P-I-X-I. She's a horror junkie from Charleston, South Carolina. You could check out her words on fairymusings.com as well. She's just amazing and a great human being, and we need more like her.
Absolutely.
Zephyr Entertainment. They go as Zephyr_Zen, capital Z-E-N, an LA-based production company, film, indie film production company, all of that good stuff. And you could check them out on ZephyrRentEntertainment.net. They are awesome. Check them out. Dean Winchester, we know who he is. There's no supernatural element to it. Dean Winchester is at Winchester Sam 05, and it's a supernatural parody, if you like, at San Wink, W-I-N-C, 84152638. Natural Lucifer, I love that one. Natural Lucifer, it's just that's a band name right there. Bobby Singer, capital S, capital N, out of Lawrence, Kansas. For supernatural coolness, go there. Kelly Cook, this is our last one for the night. She is at Benevolent Rule. That's another great name for a band. Personality, I wish I had. Punk like a junkyard dog. My actual personality, wholesome as a calico bonnet. She's an ISTJ ace book sniffer. And you can follow her on Goodreads as well. Go to her. She's just awesome. And again, more about Possessor Movie from Possessor Movie.
Absolutely.
And those are our scream outs for this evening, Johnny.
All right. If you want to find me or find out what it's like to live inside my head, you can find my writing at CrashPalaceProductions.com because Billy is a good guy.
Oh, please.
And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies, but there are B's in the Numbs. So what about you, Bill?
You could find me on Twitter at Crash Palace. And you could also go to CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and more. We are also on Spotify, iTunes, and 30 other venues. I have no idea what they are anymore. And you could find links to Johnny Numb's articles as well as from Suze Layton, who's...
Yes.
Yes, she has a new one coming up this Sunday, which is great with... who is it? Kitsy Duncan. So that's cool. And... if you're interested in books, it's great for the holidays and even beyond. It's a 3-book collection on Kindle only for under $9 for my Kink Noir series, which you could find on Amazon under PRYSTAUK. That's the best way. Bloodletting, Punishment, and Debauchery.
Speaking of art that pushes limits, that's the gift for the limit pusher in your life. Yeah.
I'm giving you metal devil horns right now, man. Thanks for saying that. That's awesome.
No, you've earned it, Bill. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait till you see the next book, baby. Started that. Oh, you wait. And the 5th book.
I love your momentum, man. I'm just like kind of floored by it, honestly, and inspired. So I'm glad to hear it's continuing, because I'm less than 100 pages out from finishing Debauchery, and I'm like, where the hell is this gonna go?
Yeah, so, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. No, writing, creating, that keeps me sane, man, because then I don't have to think about the world for a while. You know,
good point. Very valid point.
I'm writing a book. I'm a god. This is my world, and they're gonna live, and those people are gonna die, and it's great. You know, it's like, that's it, man. You know, so
sort of like the world of Possessor in a way.
I don't know. I just do whatever the worm in my head tells me to do.
Pull me out, Bill. Pull me out.
Oh man. All right, buddy. On that note, I say good night.
Good night, Bill.
Good night.